I love these guys.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Secondhand Lions podcast. I'm Bill Radford. I'm here with my great friend, John Drennan. And this is the post-Super Bowl edition of the Secondhand Lions podcast. So we have a lot to talk about with the Super Bowl, with draft prospects, and just because it's off-season, as you know, the NFL seems like it doesn't take any time off. So we're already talking about, I've seen on different podcasts and different shows on the television, like Good Morning Football, they're already talking about next year. Seattle is, of course, rated number one, and the Lions are number seven out of 32, which is actually pretty good. But start out talking about the Super Bowl, and it was 29-13 was the final score, but it wasn't that close. And as one pundit put it, it was the men against the teenagers. So you figured there was going to be trouble because I think May was sacked six times in the Pro Bowl, I mean the Super Bowl. And that was for a total of 21 times in the playoffs, which is phenomenally bad to have your quarterback sacked 21 times in four games. And whereas the Seattle team, just as surprisingly, they did not commit one turnover, either fumble or interception, in the three games they played in the playoffs. Of course, they had the bye. But the other thing that I want to just mention briefly is the value of field goals. I know there's always a kind of a debate, especially with the Lions and Dan Campbell and how he has choose field goals for going for it to try to get the first down. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But, you know, field goals are points. And I think that Seattle knew that New England was going to struggle to score, and they were going to take points when they could get them. And they could have won that game without a touchdown because the field goal kicker kicked five. Was it five or was it six? Five field goals. Yeah.
Yeah. Or four.
Five field goals, two touchdowns.
Right.
So,
well,
a lot of people said it was a boring Super Bowl, but if you like defense, it was pretty good.
Well, Bill, you know, you and I were talking ahead of the game, agreeing that we thought the Seahawks and Rams were probably the best two teams and that their game was the real Super Bowl. And we both also discussed how the Bills would have been a better opponent for the Seahawks. Of course, we'll never know. And hey, in no way do I want to take away from the Patriots' season, what they did. It was remarkable. And clearly Drake May had a rough time, three turnovers, a fumble and two interceptions, and getting sacked. And, you know, the criticism was him not adjusting, not seeing the defense, not getting the ball out quick enough. But, you know, a second-year player in the Super Bowl against a defense like that doesn't surprise me. He did finish one vote away from tying Matthew Stafford for player of the year. So, you know, kudos to him, but, you know, it was a rough night for him. And you're talking about the field goals. You know, the other thing you've talked consistently about this year, field goal as it related to the Lions, was also punts. You know, kudos to the Seahawks. They pinned the Patriots inside their 6-yard line three times. And that's skill. I mean, skill on behalf of the punter and the, you know, the gunner getting downfield and the special teams. So when you're kicking field goals or punting inside the 10, you're in good shape. And especially when you've got a great defense. I mean, New England couldn't do anything. So field goals were gold in that game. So I totally agree with you.
So looking at those two teams and thinking about the Lions next year, Boy, we need some better defense.
Yeah. We were texting each other during the Super Bowl. That's that theme repeatedly. And of course, that doesn't make us geniuses. The whole NFL world knows that. But it's exciting, though, to start thinking, every expert, including you and I, that even though we're not experts, we kind of think we are, think that the Lions aren't that far away. What do we
Right.
need? We need another good edge. We need another good D line. We need a couple pieces on the offensive line. We need to shore up safety and D backfield. Now, that sounds like a lot, but it's not like we need two or three guys at every position there. It's a handful.
Right.
So
But we're
it's.
not experts, John, but we play them online.
But we what?
We play them online. You know that old saying, I'm not a doctor, but I play one on TV.
Yeah, right.
We're not experts, but we play them. We act like we are online. Anyway.
Although we constantly say we're not, so there we go. But hey, we picked again. We both picked Seattle. A lot of people were picking the Patriots. I picked 35-24. I thought the Patriots would have some offense. They really didn't. The offense they generated at the end was kind of meaningless in a way. You picked 31-17. You were right there. It looked like another field goal by Seattle, and they're at 32, and looked like the Patriots were going to score again. So kudos on that pick. I think you and I combined did a pretty good job with our picks during this whole playoff.
We could have made some money if we were betting, guys. Of
Yeah. So,
course, we weren't
Bill.
picking with the spread. We were just picking the winner.
Right. So, Bill, I want to look at, let me get away from the Super Bowl for a minute and the coaching in the NFL. The Super Bowl did free up Kincaid, who was I think the passing coordinator for Seattle. I might have that wrong, but he's now stepping in as the head coach of the Las Vegas Raiders.
Kubiak's his name.
What did I say?
You said Kincaid.
Kincaid, yeah, Kubiak. And people are high on him, and I know the Raiders are high on him, so there's new blood there. Speaking of the Raiders, and now I'm just pulling some of the news stories out there. There's been talk about the Raiders edge from
Max
Eastern Michigan.
Crosby.
Max Crosby, about might he become a Lion? And no, he's not. He's too costly. They're not going to give up first round picks and another $30 million to an edge rusher. Keep in mind, this is a business. There's only so much money. There's only so many picks. And nobody would love to see him opposite Hutch more than me, but that's not going to happen.
No.
Other coaching things. So the Lions elevated one of their coaches to the tight end coach. I forget his name. Dan Skipper is now, he won't be a tackle anymore for Lions, but he's joining their coaching staff. I'm not quite sure what his capacity is. And Bill, I continue to hear things. I read things and listen to different interviews and podcasters, and people in the know are very high on their choice of Petsing for the offensive coordinator. They say what he did at Arizona was remarkable, given their offensive line and their backfield and what they had to work with, that he is a very creative play caller. And that with the Lions' talent, this could really be something. So I'm really excited about that. I hope it's not just hype, but real. So those are some of the things in the coaching. What about you? What are the stories or things you're seeing and hearing?
Well, like you, John, I noticed that Clint Kubiak, in his interview with Seattle, after they won the Super Bowl, they asked him about his if he's going to go to the Raiders, And at first, he tried to put it off and say, well, let me just enjoy this today. And they pressed him one more time. He said, yes, I'm going to the Raiders and I'm psyched up about it. So,
Well,
there he
kudos
was.
to and shame on the reporters. It always makes me a little cuckoo when they're asking these questions right if after a game. Are you retiring? Are you coming back? Are you staying? Are you going? Like, can I take a breath here? Can I enjoy this night?
It's like the reporter is trying to be the story.
Yeah, you're right. Like the reporter that would get my respect would be the one that says, I'm sure you're going to enjoy this tonight and for several days. And, when dust settles, we circle back. I'm going to be asking you about next year. You can leave it at that.
Well, I heard that is it Kafka? Is he
Mike Kafka.
Mike Kafka? I've heard of other teams sniffing around him already.
Yeah, he's if you don't know who Mike Kafka is, our listeners, he's took over as the head coach of the Giants during the season this year. He was the head coach when they came to Ford Field and almost beat the Lions. People are very high on him, and some of us thought he might be the offensive coordinator or get a head coaching job. But that didn't happen. He joined the Lions in a capacity that hasn't clearly been defined, but certainly at a high level on the offense. But that doesn't mean he still couldn't get poached as a coordinator somewhere. My guess is, Bill, he had strategic reasons to want to be a Lion on the Lions staff, and I doubt he's going to go anywhere at this point.
Let's hope not. That's the thing that I've learned just in the last couple of years is how extensive the coaching staffs are. I mean, you got maybe 20 coaches coaching every aspect of the, you got an O line, you got a running game coach, you got a tight ends coach, you got a receivers coach, a quarterback coach, offensive coordinator, an assistant offensive coordinator. You just go on and on with all these different coaches that are very, very specific to each position. And it's amazing how much money is spent on each team. It has nothing to do with the players.
Yeah.
And then the I think the salary cap is something like 300 to 310 million a year, something somewhere in there. That's for the players. And the coaching staff has got to be getting close to half that anyway. So you're looking at a half a billion a year. Just on the team. It doesn't have anything to do with the facilities or the security or the building or anything else. So as you're saying, it's a business. I think that escapes the notice of a lot of people when they start
Yeah,
calling the
the expenses
owners
are
cheap.
enormous.
Yeah.
I do
Right.
think one thing you said I would challenge, I think probably they pay Goff more than all their coaches combined. I mean, if he's making 50 million, Campbell's maybe making 8 million. The coaches might be making 20, 25 million. That's a lot of money for a group of coaches,
Right.
but it's a big line item, no question. I mean, when you got coaches, like you said, position coaches, assistant quarterbacks coach, and a big part of it is it's a development. The good teams, I think they develop coaches, some of which get poached and go elsewhere, but you still need good ones coming up, and that's called building a program.
Well, then you got trainers, strength trainers,
Oh,
trainers.
nutritionists, and you got meal tables, and just imagine the budget for the training room alone. Ice, tape. I mean, it's just the equipment. You think they got some pretty expensive equipment in their weight room?
I would guess, yeah.
Yeah, it's. I've got a lot of background in business, and always, not always, but I look at a lot of companies and industries and think I would love to see their line items. I would love to see their bottom line. I'm fascinated by it. Well, Bill, I have another comment about the Super Bowl, and that's the halftime performance. I know that people are split in different ways in regard to the fact that the entertainment was Bad Bunny, who sang everything in Spanish. So it's, a question, well, why that? But the comment I want to make is because for those listeners who listen to our podcast after the Bears game, the second Bears game where the Lions won last game of the year, I had mentioned I was in Puerto Rico with my wife for that podcast or for that game and watched it. And we had an amazing time in Puerto Rico. And while there, we realized what a big deal Bad Bunny is in Puerto Rico, in the Latin community, and globally. And typically over the years, and Bill, you and I talked about this, a lot of times I don't remember the halftime shows, or I didn't like them, or some I did like, some I thought, you got to be kidding me. And typically it's been entertainment, but Bad Bunny really told stories with the whole farm setting that mimicked Puerto Rico. He had, live vendors there, real vendors from Puerto Rico. They did a real wedding. That wedding scene was real. That couple got married. Many famous Puerto Ricans, Ricky Martin, Jessica Alba, Pedro Pascal, and others were all part of it. Of course, Lady Gaga was part of it. But the whole thing with the power system there that's had a lot of issues, that was part of the storytelling and the food and what life's like there. And in spite of, you come from a musical family, you've got a son who's a professional musician, and I've always felt that music is a common unifier across the world, even if you don't understand it. In terms of the language, you get the beat, the rhythm, the vibe, and so I just thought it was a great vibe, and so kudos to the NFL from my perspective. So I want to make those comments.
Well, that's certainly a very popular point of view, and like it or not, there's probably just as many people on the other side of that that didn't like it, and that's going to happen with no matter who is performing. I'm sure some of the ones I've liked, other people didn't. So you can't argue with Bad Bunny's popularity. He's the number one streamed recording artist in the whole world. Him and Taylor Swift take turns being number one. And it's interesting that I found out at Thanksgiving time when I was visiting my daughter and her family in Arizona that Taylor Swift has been approached to do the halftime show.
Yeah, I've heard that too.
She's turned it down. Reason being, they don't pay. So, whoever puts on the show is footing the expense themselves. They don't pay. The NFL does not pay the halftime entertainers at all. Somebody was trying to make a big deal about that online. I saw today that the NFL, the clickbait was the NFL is refusing to pay Bad Bunny. They never pay. They don't pay anybody. So, but Taylor Swift wasn't going to do it because she wasn't getting paid.
And
And
does NFL have any budget for like the scenery and stuff, or did Bad Bunny have to
as
cover all
far as
that?
I know, it's all out of pocket of the performer.
Well, that's impressive then. Not only Bad Bunny, but I think back to some of the staging in the past.
Well,
That's not cheap to put that
and the
stuff.
NFL argument is that We're giving you a platform for 140, 150 million people to see you. And that's going to benefit you financially through increased sales. And I would imagine Taylor Swift thought, how much bigger can I get? I don't need this.
Yeah, to me, that's a very legitimate position by the NFL. It is the biggest stage in the world. And
Right,
you're right,
but
Taylor Swift, or she may be waiting until the time seems more right for her.
well, and Bad Bunny didn't need the money either.
Right.
Neither one of them did. So he had his own reasons for doing it. She has her reasons for not.
Right, and I don't think Michael Jackson needed the money, and I don't think Snoop
Right.
Dogg. Let's go down the list.
Right. But
But the
all these people
popularity.
are multi-millionaires, so
Yeah, and I think just if you're an entertainer like that, to be able to say I did it. I mean, that's tougher than being a team that gets in it, 'cause there's two teams. There's only one entertainer
well, this time
or
there was
not.
four or five.
Yeah, I mean, every year it seems like you got whoever the lead is, they bring in their entourage. I've seen Eminem on stage with various rappers and so on. But anyhow, well, enough of that. Bill, I did, we are a Detroit Lions podcast, and two things I know you know about, and I'm in no particular order. First of all, the Detroit Pistons brawl with the Carolina Hornets were four. It was literally looked like a routine play, but one of the Pistons kind of jabbed the Hornet in the face, and then the benches started to empty, and four players got suspended for games. The most foolish one was Stewart from the Pistons, 7-game suspension. Why? He comes off the bench and starts punching people. I mean, again, immaturity, 24-year-old or whatever, making a lot of money and thinks he can do that. But two players from each team suspended for a number of games. So that was one. And the Pistons did win the game. So that was a saving grace. Number two, Justin Verlander's back as a Detroit Tiger.
yeah.
I don't know if he can throw anymore, but be neat that he's coming back for a swan song.
You know, he didn't have a bad year last year. He started the year, I think, 0-8. But he finished strong in the last his after that he had an earned run average of two something, which is outstanding. So
Well, I know
he
he had a decent year, and isn't he about your age?
I wish I was 43.
Okay, he's about Aaron Rodgers' age.
He has a Sports Illustrated swimsuit model for a wife
Yeah.
and some kids. He's won the Cy Young three times, the World Series twice, so he's definitely a future Hall of Famer.
I think it's neat he's coming back, and no doubt he'll contribute some innings throughout the season and some leadership. And they re-signed Scooble, right?
They didn't re-sign him. He went to arbitration, so they signed him for a year. He's a free agent at the end of the year. They signed Framber Valdez, I think that's his last name, from Houston, who's another big, strong, hard-throwing left-hander who's done very well for Houston. They signed him to a multi-year contract. He's actually going to make more money next year than Scooble does, but I think the rumor is that at the end of this next year, the baseball owners are going to push, a lot of them anyway, are going to push for a salary cap. So
Got it.
the Players Union for baseball is the strongest of all the sports unions, and they will not accept that. So the likelihood, or at least that's what I've heard, is there will be a strike or a lockout, whichever one you want to call it. So it looks like the Tigers are really going for it this year, and maybe they're hoping there will be a salary cap. And then they
Yeah,
can.
and I agree. They're going for it with that kind of signing and, saying, hey, we're in a position to win a World Series. Let's go for it.
Right.
So,
So, go ahead.
well, we're here to talk about the Lions. And so the question that being asked a lot is, will Dan Campbell and Brad Holmes go for it? But again, they have the salary cap to deal with. And but my sense is they are going for it. They will go for it. They're going to clear up some salary cap so they can. I'm feeling good. Bring in a veteran qualified center to anchor that O line. Bring in one or two other free agents, maybe a safety, a tight end. There are some good tight ends in free agency, Bill. And then with their draft picks, bring in the edge and the tackle and another safety. And I think they can get the pieces in here. So next year, the Lions are a team, other teams aren't going to want to play.
Yeah. Well, I don't think they wanted to play him this year. It's just they didn't. I'm still, if I go back over the season, I'm still amazed that they didn't make the playoffs.
Yeah, you and me both.
You figure they should have beat the Vikings twice and split with Green Bay, and then they're in. They're 12-5 at that point. So
So, Bill, you don't think them going 9-8 and dropping had anything to do with you and me doing a podcast, do
yeah, we sort of,
you?
it's like that old saying, something about a butterfly beats its wings and it moves the farthest star or something like that. So
Right.
we
Butterfly
might have
effect.
done, we might have messed up the mojo somehow.
Well, I don't think 1 year is enough of a sampling. So let's see. You opened this podcast by saying that this is the first, or rather, that this is our post Super Bowl podcast, first one coming out of the Super Bowl. And when you said that, my immediate thought was, what will we be saying 1 year from now? Will it be a Lions win?
Well, hopefully we'll still be alive.
First things first, right?
Correct. And I mean, Detroit sports are really set up well. I mean, the Lions, I think they're going to do well. The Tigers look like they could be a real World Series contender. The Pistons have the second best record in the NBA just behind Oklahoma City, and the Detroit Red Wings look like they're going to make the playoffs this year. Michigan football is in good hands. So, all the way around, it's a good time to be a Detroit, Michigan sports fan.
And Bill, Detroit's getting back a WNBA franchise. They used to have one, and it moved somewhere, Texas, I think. But now it's part of a group with Sheila Hamp Ford, and I believe I forget the names, but some big names in the Detroit sports scene and
Didn't
business.
they win the WNBA once or twice?
I don't know. I wasn't really following it, but I
Bill
just.
Laimbeer was the coach.
Yeah, he did coach.
What was their name? The Detroit Shock, was that right?
I think you're right. So while Bill's looking that up, which he's doing, I know he's doing that, we have discussed between ourselves, are we going to continue podcasting each week here during the so-called off season? And for now, we are. At least next week, we'll be back. And there's always developments in the NFL, and there's going to be a lot coming as it relates to free agency and drafts and the combines and still coaching moves in the wind and players retiring and injury updates. And that's one, Bill, that we started this season with what we felt was the best safety combination in the NFL. We ended the season without those safeties, with patchwork safeties. And, huge news for Detroit is when the season starts, what will be the status of Kirby Joseph and Brian Branch? And right now we have no idea, but those are the kinds of things that will continue to be storylines.
Well, I did look that up, John, and The Detroit Shock were WNBA champions in 2003, 2006, and 2008.
Oh, good memory.
And
Yeah.
the head coach was Bill Laimbeer. In one of those years, Rick Mahorn was an assistant.
How about that? So, if you're old-time Detroit fans, you know these names very well. Otherwise, you can look them up.
That's right. Bill Laimbeer and Rick Mahorn were teammates in the 1989 Detroit Pistons championship team, and Laimbeer was there again in 1990. But yeah, I think that I'm optimistic about the Lions. I think that Coach Campbell probably learned a thing or two about not being a gunslinger all the time. Hopefully he was paying attention at the Super Bowl and he saw that, hey, you can actually score points with field goals. So,
Yeah,
and
Bill, I think.
we have a good punter too.
Right. Yeah. Well, I think we're already making progress. We've got what sounds like a really creative play caller, offensive coordinator. That's going to remove Campbell from that because he was not a good game manager when he took over play calling. And I
No.
think what you just said is right. I think Brad Holmes has learned that maybe he's got to be a little more aggressive in free agency. Of course, the injuries, you can't predict that, but we just need some more depth. And I just think I'm already excited for next year. So, anything
Yep.
else you got here on this Detroit Lions podcast?
Not today, John. It's good to be with you again. Look forward to next week.
All right, everyone. We are the Secondhand Lions. Our website is the SHL. Lions, I'm sorry, the SHLpodcast.com. And we love doing this and we're going to keep bringing it. So take care. See you in a week.
All right, goodbye, everybody.